We're different. We didn't start with an endowment. And I will say that as much as I was wishing in our early years that some Korean version of Bill Gates would come knock on my doorstep and tell us that they would like to give us a lot of money for our foundation, we actually started with just a slogan. It was a dollar a day for our neighbors. And it was really the idea that for less than a cup of coffee or a bottle of water, that we could set aside something to give back.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story, and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Kyung Yoon, President and CEO of the Korean American Community Foundation, or KACF. Kyung, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Kyung, tell us about KACF.
So the Korean American Community Foundation was founded in 2002 in New York City by a group of Korean Americans. I was one of them. We were all mostly what we call 1.5 or second generation, meaning that we had grown up most of our lives in America or were born here. And many of us didn't even speak Korean. And yet we all shared a common thread of just being very proud of our heritage and wanting to figure out any ways that we could contribute. And what we didn't know was that there were a lot of needs in our own immigrant community, because some of us, I remember in that room, it really was like a conversation over dinner. There were lawyers, there were doctors. I was a broadcast journalist. Juju Chang was also there. She's a co-founder of KACF with me. And Juju and I knew each other through our industry, but most of us as Korean Americans didn't know each other. And so what we saw was that there was an opportunity to come together around a shared interest and passion, really, for giving of ourselves, our time, but also our resources in every way to help those who were struggling. And we know all about struggles because many of us had grown up with it. We had seen our parents struggling with lack of English proficiency or just lack of connections or opportunities. And we realized that growing up in America as immigrants or as children of immigrants, that many of us had been told all about getting into that right school or getting that job or getting a foothold into American corporate culture. But we'd never really had conversations growing up about what it means to give. And that is because I think our parents were worried about meeting urgent needs. But here we are, thanks to many of their sacrifices, in a place where we didn't have to think about just surviving anymore. We could think about what it means to thrive and to be contributors to American society as well. Many of us had children, and we wanted to give them some framework around thriving in this country. And yet we didn't have the tools or the vocabulary. We hadn't really thought about this much. And so KACF kind of became this place where we could co-create something around philanthropic giving together as Korean Americans.
So Kyung, take us back a little bit. So you're meeting these other Korean American men and women, and somehow you're sensing a need in the community. It's one thing to say there's a need. It's another thing to say, I'm going to do something about the need, and we're going to do it through a foundation. So how do you go from, wow, there's needs in our community, to identifying the needs and then deciding to fund it?
Yeah, I think as many of us in the Asian American community know, and I think others, our community has the stereotype of being the so-called model minority. And in one respect, it seems like such a compliment that we are the model minorities who come to this country, and within a generation, you know, we're all like going to Ivy League schools and we're all successful. And there are enough examples of that so that you can, if you want, keep burnishing that stereotype. And yet where that kind of stereotype we know is very harmful is that it erases and just sweeps under the carpet the reality and the complexities of our own communities, that not everyone is doing well, that there are a lot of people who are struggling and who are extremely vulnerable. But as long as you have those stereotypes, then often resources do not get to those who are struggling because, you know, policymakers or foundations or donors don't think about the needs of Asian Americans. So we also are harmed by that stereotype. I remember in that dinner time conversation, there were many of us who didn't know that 1 in 4 Korean senior citizens lived below the poverty line. You know, about the rates of domestic violence, the mental health issues, the things that are often very stigmatized and silenced, and that we don't talk about ourselves. And so there is a lack of awareness about those kinds of needs. And I will say, to answer your question, way before that dinner in 2002, I had been volunteering in our community. I was a broadcast journalist. I was asked to MC different kinds of fundraising events. And one of them that I had done and was very involved with was the New York Asian Women's Center, which helps women and children in Asian American communities in the greater New York area who are affected by domestic violence. And I joined the board. I actually became the board chair, and I worked very closely with the executive director over many years. And I saw that actually for many of nonprofits in our communities, that it is not about not being able to counsel abused women or about providing services or about addressing the needs. It's the fact that you have to spend more than half your time seeking funding and fundraising all the time. And I think heads of associations and nonprofits who might be listening to this will really understand that.
Yeah.
And those are not necessarily your strong points. It's not why you go into this field. You know, often you have a master's in social work. You don't have a master's in fundraising, you know? And then, so what we saw was a big, big funding gap in our community, and that we could address that ourselves too, not holy and being the holy grail for everything, but that by actually thinking about how we can leverage our giving and that we can actually build something really significant there. And that's why we decided to focus on the funding.
Well, let's turn to your journey, Kyung, because before you helped co-found KACF, you were a broadcast journalist. And so talk to us about that journey where you left broadcast journalism and then went full-time into the foundation. That's a leap.
Yeah, well, it is and it isn't. I mean, in the sense that I was a news reporter in New York City on Fox 5 in the 90s. And it was a time of a lot of ethnic and racial tensions between the Korean community and African Americans. I think everybody will remember in 1992, the LA riots and the kind of eruption that happened there. It wasn't just something that happened. It was like long simmering tensions. And in New York, we had boycotts of Korean-owned grocery stores by African Americans. And I remember the narrative because I was covering some of those flare-ups. And it was very much communities of color, where Koreans had set up 24-hour deli stores and were often working around the clock in dangerous situations. They were getting robbed or whatever, you know, because often they couldn't afford to have a deli in Manhattan's, you know, Upper East Side. So they would be going into less expensive neighborhoods. At the same time, you also had African-American communities that just were feeling very disrespected by the merchants because wouldn't talk to them, but often they didn't speak English. You know, they said they didn't look them in the eye, but that's also a Korean cultural thing that you don't look people in the eye. You know, they would buy something and they would be putting the change down on the countertop. And that is because that's what they do. So there was a lot of misunderstandings. And so I think that in some ways at that time, that planted seeds in me that made me think like, oh, you know, my community needs to do some work on this. I didn't think it would be me, you know, down the road. But I just say that because that was one of the seeds that have blossomed into KACF. Also, before I was a broadcast journalist, I worked also at the World Bank. I actually have a master's in economics and in addressing poverty issues. And so that was also something that I've always been very passionate about. I think being Korean American, I left Korea when I was 6 years old, but in my lifetime, I have seen and observed, maybe from across the ocean, but been keenly interested in the economic development of South Korea and very proud of that. I mean, it really is a miracle what can happen when you have policies and people and investments coming together and coalescing. So I feel like those are some of the strands that have come together around how we can apply some of those lessons also to the Korean American community that I am very much a part of. And that is what we're trying to build for our children's future.
Well, let's turn to KACF. You're a foundation. So you're fundraising and then giving back to the community. So talk to us about the funding that you're doing. Give us a sense of scale and give us examples of the types of organizations that you're funding. What kind of needs are they addressing?
I would say at the start that our North Star in our funding is around building the economic security of low-income and vulnerable immigrants, primarily in the Korean-American community. And yet, because we don't just fund Korean American community organizations, we are actually the largest funder of Asian American nonprofits in the greater New York area. And we recently started to expand to other cities as well. And we are a community foundation. That is different from a private foundation. So typically, actually, foundations are created when somebody of wealth or some people of wealth or whatever company sets aside funding and then creates a foundation, and then they invest it and they'll have an endowment and they just give out like a certain percentage of the returns every year. We're different. We didn't start with an endowment. And I will say that as much as I was wishing in our early years that some Korean version of Bill Gates would come knock on my doorstep and tell us that they would like to give us a lot of money for our foundation, we actually started with just a slogan. It was a dollar a day for our neighbors. And it was really the idea that for less than a cup of coffee or a bottle of water, that we could set aside something to give back. And I think in my community, for sure, Korean Americans, apart from church giving, we didn't have very long or, you know, established habits or practices of giving. And so that was the beginning. And, you know, the dollar a day campaign.
Did that work?
It did. I mean, because it made it accessible to people. But I want to be clear, like $365 donation.
That's a lot.
It can be a lot for people, you know, or it can be not a lot, depending on where you're coming from. But I will say that it was something that kind of set a marker for us. And I think just the ethos of a community, building community giving that's different from that Korean Bill Gates type, you know, Bill Kim, you know, showing up and saying, I will give you $365,000, you know, to help start this foundation. That would have been wonderful. But at the same time, we actually thought, well, if we could find 1,000 people, like we go out, you know, we don't know 1,000 people, but between us, we can create this ripple effect. And then 1,000 of us doing a dollar a day, that is even more powerful because it's more durable. You know, one donor can show up, they can also disappear. But if 1,000 of us and we're building, and that's the base building part and kind of the community building part. And so I will say that our first year of fundraising was 2003 and reaching into our own pockets, asking our friends and families, because we had no track record. We just had this vision. We were very proud to raise $60,000 that we gave out in five grants in 2003. They were about $12,000 each. In 2024, we just surpassed $17 million in grants.
That you gave in 1 year?
No, that was cumulative. But every year, our giving has increased. So last year, we gave out over $3 million in grants.
Wow.
And so just like anything that is going to be durable and building muscle and building muscle memory, you know, people are like used to giving now. And so we have seen that, you know, you don't turn from like the beach weakling, you know, to like muscle man overnight. It just requires sustained practice and habit. And that's what we have been doing. It's been a long time since we needed to do the dollar a day. I mean, there's still people who will give us whatever, you got to start, but it is in that practice and then seeing the impact of your giving and then giving more. And that's been the joy.
So give us examples of the types of organizations that you funded in the last year, for example.
Sure. So when we're talking about building economic security, it can be very broad in the sense that when we think about what makes somebody insecure, and that is really about so many things that could catapult you into being right in the margins of security to one catastrophe, right? It could be a healthcare thing, or it can be losing your home, or it can be losing your scholarship so that you can't go to school. I mean, so we fund around all of these kinds of things that bolster opportunities and create stability for people. So that can be around food insecurity, around housing, around healthcare, around violence, around workforce development, like opportunities to be able to plan for your future. And so when I say that we are funding many, many Asian American, Pan-Asian organizations, it's also because we don't just fund direct service. We don't just fund like a food pantry. We're funding efforts to advocate for our community so that we can get more access to public benefits or more of the city budget or funding from the state. Certainly the federal funding right now is also a challenge. And so because of that, when you're in the advocacy space, that means that you've got to join your voices. It can't just be like Koreans saying this or Chinese or Filipinos or even immigrants only, you know, that all of us that have a shared interest and goals join. And so we fund a lot of pan-Asian advocacy efforts and also around things that are going to move policies. Because again, if you think about funding a food bank, it's important because somebody's hungry, they need to be fed that day. But we also don't want to be just in the business of funding just band-aids on the problems. We want to be addressing systemic problems and deep-rooted barriers to opportunities for our community.
So, Kyung, you mentioned federal funding is a challenge right now. What is the fundraising environment like and what's working?
Well, some of the organizations that rely on federal funding, mostly they are direct service organizations. You know, they're actually doing work that the government should be doing, but then, you know, they're kind of deputizing these nonprofits, especially ones that are reaching very diverse communities. Those funding, when it's cut, it's really important that foundations like ours, that individual donors, that other sources of funding step up to help fill those gaps. It's a really challenging time because also we're seeing that, and I'm sure many of your listeners are also seeing that when there's uncertainty about the stock markets or about anything, then it affects donor behavior as well.
Yeah.
But I do think that it is a time to really rally together around the fact that this is a time that now more than ever that the services that these nonprofits and maybe the associations as well, like uplifting the voice and the impact of the communities that they represent, they really need resourcing. And so we have seen a real upsurge from our donor base as well to be committed. But that is also something that is the outgrowth of trust and relationships. And our foundation, we've been building that over many, many years and building these practices of giving Because through KACF, we have many donors who don't feel that they have to be the only ones, that they don't have to wait till they're a millionaire to get their first grant, or that they have to be burdened to be doing 100% by themselves, that we all, by giving a little bit together, that we can actually make significant change. And I will say one other thing that we saw that was very affirming is that last year we received a McKinsey Scott grant.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Her philanthropy is really amazing. Like, she has made it very much a stated goal that her foundation is going to find and fund those organizations that are really the most effective in serving communities that have been invisible to other mainstream funders. And so the fact that they saw us as a partner that is really reaching these communities in a significant way, it was very affirming. But at the same time, it shows to us that we're not just counting on other people to give us the funding, that we can generate and regenerate more ourselves.
Yeah. You talk about doing all of this together. So speaking of which, you have something called a giving summit. What's that?
So the reason we started the giving summit is that we wanted to have a place. I mean, it sounds very dry to say it's a conference, but it is. Like, it's a place to come together and to really explore giving. What does that mean in terms of an investment mindset, in terms of a change mindset, not a charity mindset? Meaning that many of us, you know, like, we're all good-hearted, and let's say we have like $10 to give. The most immediate gratification may not be the most impactful, meaning you see somebody begging or something. I mean, and you want to give it, and that's very immediate, but you don't know exactly where that money is going to go.
It's also not going to make a systemic difference.
Maybe, but it might really help that person that day. So, I mean, I think we can say that it's not one or the other necessarily, but often that's the only way that people give, because they see it and they feel it. And so I think the Giving Summit for us was a way to really take smart people in our community who might never have thought deeply about what are the returns that I seek on my charitable dollars. And these really smart people who would be like rigorous in looking at returns on their investments in dollar terms, well, we were looking at social returns, you know. And so the Giving Summit is a very joyful place where we hear from more seasoned philanthropists, we hear from our nonprofit partners about the needs in the community, we explore board service, we explore ways that we can give tools to our children. And I would say that raising my kids, I have two sons who are grown, and we live in New York City. And right around the time they entered seventh grade, they started getting invited to a lot of bar mitzvahs. And I saw that my friends in the Jewish communities, that it was very ingrained around teaching these young people at 13 about the mitzvah, the hadassah. These were all concepts of what it means to be giving. And that a successful life is about giving. And I just remembered also some of my friends in college who had intergenerational wealth. I realized that they grew up like having dinner time conversations with their parents, you know, about what cause should we give this year? You know, this kind of thing. Most of us had never had that kind of dinner time conversations growing up. So we wanted to be able to have those conversations with our children as well. And so the Giving Summit for us is a way to set that table for all of us to come together and really explore and get excited and also help educate each other around giving.
Well, that is lovely. Kyung, it is 2025. You've been in business as a foundation since 2002. What is the world that you envision? What does success look like for the foundation?
To answer that question, I just want to go back to my six-year-old self when I came to this country. And I felt absolutely grateful to be in America, and there was a lot of abundance, but I felt completely in the margins. Kids made fun of my name being different. I had a Barbie doll, but None of them looked like me. There was nobody on television if I turned on that looked like me. I mean, it was a very disempowered place to be. So I think for me personally, as an American, but also as a mom, you know, when I think about the future, it is about an America where we are no longer in the margins. And part of that is to join together and really figure out how we can shift some of the power dynamics that exist. And certainly in one space, certainly in the nonprofit world, the accepted dynamic has been that we are the ones that are in need. We have our hand out, and the powers that be will decide if we get anything. And for us at KACF, part of what really drove us to think of ourselves as philanthropists. I mean, close your eyes. You think of the word philanthropist. Does it conjure up somebody who looks like, you know, certainly didn't for me. Just think of a Carnegie or a Rockefeller or a Gates. So we've really wanted to see ourselves as philanthropic givers and to create and acknowledge and celebrate that we have that power within our own community.
I love that. And you're doing it every day. Kyung, thank you for this interview. You'll have to come back and tell us about all the amazing things that you're doing and the progress that you're making towards that vision.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.